Welcome to Reading Deadly Troubadours, the weekly podcast where I, Brent Thomas, read my novel, Deadly Troubadours. Let's begin, shall we?
Chapter 28 With the Dragon Army, 1. Kerydim smiled. He felt young again, important, needed. He almost wanted to make the joke that he didn't know whether to actually kill the great beast when it appeared, or merely thank it and simply send it on its way. He could make the joke, but he didn't see any real humor in it. The truth was, he did feel a debt of gratitude to the dragon, and yet he would not hesitate in ending it. That was his purpose. It was why he was here. Why all the boys were here. He stepped out of his command tent and marveled at what he saw. 5,000 gleaming scarlets spread across the field before him. 50 ballista were being constructed, all facing north. 10 specialized chariots had been fashioned, with enough space in the cart for a ballista, a shooter, a reloader, and a driver. Currently, they were zipping back and forth on the plain so the drivers could get used to maneuvering the chariots with the extra weight. Cannons were being mounted on rotating stands. Bows and crossbows were being readied wherever the eye looked. A countless amount of arrows and bolts were being fletched by anyone who had the skill. Kerydim had to hand it to Everett, the Lord Guard did know how to muster his troops, even if he did so with the knowledge that at least a fifth of the boys on the field would die by fire. That was not a conversation that had gone well. "You mean to tell me that you wish to sacrifice 1,000 scarlets to this beast?" It had come out as a snarl. Until that point, Trin had met Kerydim's demands with measured stoicism. As difficult as it might be to organize the manpower and construct the weaponry the dragon hunter claimed he required, there was some sense to it. On the fields between Trist and the Northern Mountains, the conflict would be away from the city, a point that Kerydim well knew. Would you rather sacrifice 1/5 of the town, its people? To take down this beast, you will need to shed blood. You tell me whose blood you want it to be.
You title yourself Dragon Hunter, bristled the Lord Guard. Shouldn't you take responsibility for hunting it yourself?
I'll hunt it, if that's what you like. After it burns this city to the ground, I'll start my hunt. After all, it is a foolish hunter that stands flat-footed in the path of a charging beast.
Kerydim paused to take a cookie from the silver saucer in front of him. The cookies were a request. He wanted to see if Everett would comply. He made his choice and chewed slowly. All the while, his eyes dared the Lord Guard to speak. This is not a hunt. It is a siege preparations, and the foe that is coming is unlike any you have ever faced. But if you think you know better how to handle it, then say the word and I'll be on my way.
Trin tried to look composed at what they both knew was a taunt. Tristian protocols made it quite clear that once a dragon hunter was approved by the Council of Lords, that hunter had the right to commandeer any standing city forces. The Council had wasted no time in appointing Kerydim Smythe as Legatus and Supreme Commander of the to-be-assembled Dragon Army. It was the Council's last act before escaping to the south. Trin was instructed to provide whatever support Kerydim needed to protect Trist. Should he defy Kerydim, then his standing and position could easily go up in smoke.
If that is what you need to protect Trist, then that is what you shall have. The words sounded almost painful.
Kerydim smiled as he thought back on the anger in Everett's eyes. Trin had always been a stickler for the rules. Smythe breathed in deep. The scent of shaved wood flavored the air from all the fletchers readying their projectiles. It was a glorious smell. For the next hour he walked among the troops. He gave orders for trenches to be dug and for the dirt to be arranged in curves as fire stops.
he kept having to remind the diggers to stop thinking in straight lines, or that they only needed to prepare for a frontal assault. They were facing a foe that would fly overhead and then swing back around. It would land only if it had exhausted its fire or if it saw a purpose in landing. There was little way of predicting where that would occur. He had been smug with Everett about the loss of troops. He had done so to annoy the man. Now, seeing the young brave faces following orders, he felt guilty for being so glib about the number that would likely die. The boys deserved better than being reduced to a math equation of acceptabilities, especially the ones who would suffer the pain of dying by tooth, claw, or fire. By the end of the hour, he could feel his spirit start to sink. He was an old man surrounded by youth. Youth that didn't know they were here to sacrifice themselves so that he could do his job. It was time to go back to his tent. He had preparations of his own to undertake. He hoped the weapon that Academic had boasted of worked as well against a real dragon as it did against all the simulacra. If it did, it could save many lives today. Still, he would have his entire arsenal ready, just in case. He looked at his trunk and sighed. Would this be the beast that did him in? It was the same thought that plagued him every time he started his hunt. As the years wore on, he had grown more comfortable with the possibility that it would be his last hunt. But he didn't agree to take down this beast because he thought it could win. He smiled as he went to unlatch the trunk of supplies. But first, there was one more order of business he wanted to take care of.
"Marcus!" he bellowed.
A moment later, Trin's little helper entered. "Yes, Legatus," he said, standing at attention.
"Those cookies we brought. Have someone bring in a plate."
"Yes, Legatus." A quick salute and the aide was gone. Caridim gave out a little chuckle. He wished he could see Trin's tight-ass face when he was told that the leader of the dragon army snacked on cookies as he prepared for battle.
"This is a stupid plan. Haven't you ever heard an army travels on its stomach?"
"I have heard that. What I have not heard is how slicing carrots and making curry will get us close enough to the dragon to return this stupid egg."
"I think it would be better to dice the carrots into chunks, Demetrius, rather than just slicing them."
"Not the point, Alexander."
Demetrius threw the length of carrot he had been slicing into the pot of water. He had hoped the plop would be more resonant and therefore more satisfying. As it was, the tiny splash was swallowed up by the noise of the tent kitchen. "We are supposed to be finding a way to drive back a dragon. A dragon that we woke, by the way, and instead we have entered ourselves into the endless task of cutting the weak old vegetables for an army that never seems to tire of eating." Alexander smiled as he finished the last onion on his cutting board. "Well..." He stretched the word out as he lifted the massive slab of wood and guided the sliding onion cuttings into the same pot of water that held Demetrius's carrots. "You have to admit, blending into the army kitchens was a clever idea. How else would we have gotten this far out of the city unnoticed? Who would try to sneak into such a task?"
"I know it was a clever idea. In fact, I believe it was my clever idea. Are you sure?"
"I thought it was Talbert's."
"If it was Talbert's, then why isn't he here?"
"Because when he and Kestra snuck off to find that dragon-slaying fellow, you knocked over the previous pot of curry, leaving you with the cook's two options of making a replacement pot or being in a replacement pot." Demetria shot the Master of Song a look that was equal parts embarrassment and agitation. He felt a fool for knocking over that pot. Not only did he split the party by making himself and Alexander responsible for the preparation of another, but he had also managed to cover most of his clothes in curry. His only good fortune was that, rather than tipping the pot onto himself and causing severe burns, he had slipped into the spilled and cooling dregs. His clothes were slimy and pungent, but at least he was whole. And his tumbling struggles to stand in the brown mess had brought the cook to tears with laughter, likely reducing any further punishment. "I'd rather be finding care at him," grumbled Demetrius. He and Alexander took the handles of the giant pot and carried it to the ever-burning cook fires. The cook would take over from here, turning the pot of water and vegetables into a brown spice stew that would be eaten with the undercooked rice. The life of a soldier in Trin's army was grand. Or, at least it normally was, except this time, a number of kitchen staff that normally saw to the proper nourishment of the troops were on detail to tend to the whims of the great dragon slayer, who now led the army. Needless to say, the cooks were not happy with the change, but one thing that they had learned was never to question orders. However, everyone had their limits. "Another plate of fucking cookies?" Master Cook Hearn had spent his adult life with one hand in the fires that fed soldiers. He was calm and rational in an environment that always needed things hotter and faster. He had honored the new legatus's request for a plate of cookies. Then came in the orders for wine-soaked pork ribs, accompanied by steamed sesame vegetables and freshly pressed juices, and almond-crusted trout. The orders did not cease, and Hearn did not like having to reassign those he would normally be feeding the men just to prepare for the requests of a glorified camp guest. Hearn knew, as did the rest, that when whatever foe they were fortifying against showed, that it would be Marcus the men would look to issue orders. Hearn resented Marcus being used as a steward by this fossil of a legatus, whose fame was based in children's stories. But if this Smythe wanted a steward, then Master Cook Hearn had the perfect choice in mind. "You, stinkers!" Hearn called out to the mouse of a man struggling to keep up his end of the cookpot. "Put the pot down and come over here. Patches, keep it moving." The one with the brightly quilted clothes picked up both ends and resumed carrying the pot. He moved slower, but steadier without his partner. As the little one came closer, the scent of curry grew strong enough Hearn felt he could almost see the vapors. It was perfect. "Here." Hearn shoved the tray with its 12 perfect cookies into Demetrius's surprised hands. "Take these to Legatus Smythe's tent. Tell them that you are there to serve, and that you are not to leave his side. Understand?" Demetrius nodded. "Good. Now go." Demetrius scampered off with the plate of cookies. His aroma lingered behind. Hearn chuckled. "And fuck your cookies." Hearn was so satisfied in the sending of his little message that he failed to notice that Patches had also crept away from the kitchens. The only thing Kestra and Talbert had going for them was that the camp was so full of soldiers that no one took much notice in the pair of them, other than those protecting the Lord Guard's residence and Trist's Grand Hall. Practically every barrack had been emptied and drafted into the Dragon Army. Even the training academics had been emptied to bolster ranks. Two additional unknown and confused-looking faces just blended into the mix. "Isn't there something we should discuss?" Kestra asked. "What do you have on your mind?" Talbert responded. He knew what she was going to ask and was stalling, hoping the few additional seconds gained would lead to inspiration. "You said you had a plan. The first step was to join the army and head off the dragon before it arrives at and then proceeds to destroy Trist. The final step was the dragon happily returning home with its egg. The missing step is how we accomplish that without dying horribly." "Well, if we die quick enough, it might not be so horrible." "Dying in any manner that can be summed up by 'a dragon did it' sounds pretty horrible to me. And cut the shit. Do you have a plan, or do we need to start thinking clever thoughts?" "To be honest, I used up all my cleverness in remembering to take the egg away from Demetrius. That damn fool will probably just turn it over to this Caradim Smythe." "And remind me why that is a bad thing. Smythe is supposedly famous for hunting dragons." "Right.
And how many decades ago was that? Besides, I'm not sure we can trust a man who marches an army like this out to meet a dragon. Kestra looked around. All she saw were men with sharpened steel and covered in sturdy boiled leather and forged steel. Seems like a capable crowd. Look again. These are town guards and a few returned frontier warriors. I'm certain that if this crowd were tasked with rounding up the free thinkers, they could tear down Trist and accomplish the goal with the effectiveness of a hammer. But against a dragon? Look at their eyes. Behind the bold talk is panic. How many do you suspect will break and run when the dragon's shadow falls in them? Kestra looked closer. Now that she was looking for it, the fear coming off the assembled men was all too apparent. The few who didn't look afraid came off as all too drunk. If one man were to turn, then 30 would surely follow. Then why are they here? Fodder. It's all I can imagine. They kept walking. Motion gave the appearance of purpose. Purpose kept them free from questions, even as out of place as they were. Kestra broke the silence. But we still need a plan. Best I can think of is we steal some horses and ride out as far as we can, place the egg and hope for the best. Hope for the best as in hope that if the beast gets its egg back, it will just turn around and head home? Talbot shrugged. If she came all the way out here for her child, then why would she risk him in a fight? Some people obsess over revenge. Let's hope she has more sense than people. Right, was all Kestra said to that. So, to sum up, we only need to figure out a way to steal horses from a fortified camp that is preparing for an attack from an angry dragon, then meet up with Demetrius and Alexander only so we can leave the egg in a field in the hope that the mother dragon will find it and then return to her mountain. That's about it. Well, I guess we don't really need those two. But whatever will we do without our thief mage and master of song? Talbert did not need to look at Kestra to know she was smirking as she spoke. I guess we will just be at a loss, he retorted. Let's just hope they don't do anything rash. Kestra cast Talbert a look. Little chance of them not. I just hope they can hold off another hour. I swear, we spend most of our time bailing them out of trouble. A bubble of laughter erupted between the pair as they walked by a group of grim-faced scarlets. In the end, it was this laughter that was their undoing. Hemish, one of the few guards who was kept on after Trin's culling, looked up at the sound, so out of place in a camp so anxious and full of fear, he saw something familiar in the two faces that passed by. He whistled to his companions and jerked his towards the pair. Thinker brats, he said, and spat heavily. Hemish rose. The others, sharing his campfire, followed. Hey, gutter rats, he shouted. Where are you headed in such a hurry? Both Kestra and Talbert tensed, but kept walking. There was always the chance another was being hailed, or that their pursuer would lose interest after a few more paces. This was not the case. Instead, what happened was Talbert stumbling forward after being struck in the back of the head by a flung rock. Kestra swiveled as Talbert fought to regain his balance. "That get your attention?" Hemish asked. "See? I recognize your faces. Pair of thieflings you are. What's it you call yourselves? Dangerous trumpeters?" Deadly, Kestra began with a sneer as Talbert cut her off. Deadly mistaken you are. Never heard of such a group. Talbert felt a trickle of blood run over his fingers as he rubbed the back of his scalp. Just two new enlists. Are you now? Hemish spat again. I'm sure we could match wits here. I'd ask questions about where and with who you learned from in the academy. You might even answer some of the questions like you knew how to talk about it. But to do that, I'd either want to trip you up or have doubts. Neither be the case here.
More and more eyes were turning toward them. Kestra was calculating the odds as they grew from fair to grave to insurmountable. Talbert did his best to keep the world from swaying in time with a throbbing in his head. "I'll make it simple. Come with me and we'll lock you away. Or don't. And then we beat you down, truss you up, and then lock you away. Which do you like?" Talbert tried to sort his thoughts and think of something clever. Instead, he wobbled and almost fell. "Can you repeat the options?" Hemish smiled. "I'm all for simple." It was Kestra's turn to interject. "If you are so sure you can beat us down, why don't you try first?" "2-on-1, you mean?" "No, just you and me. Unless you think you need a friend's help." The gathering crowd gave a laugh at this. Hemish shook his head at the goad. "Sorry, little miss. Don't like to beat up little girls." "Don't worry," Kestra said as she slid into a more antagonistic fighting stance. "You won't." More laughter from the crowd, as well as a few calls of encouragement for Hemish to take down the wee little one. Hemish spat again. He didn't really want to resort to violence, especially not towards a small girl. But she was forcing his hand. He had recognized them as known thieves and figured they were here to loot whatever they could from the army's stores. He had hoped the threat of confrontation would be enough to make them surrender. But now, with the crowd jeering and the girl taunting, it looked as if he was going to need to bloody his knuckles on a child to see justice done. "All right, little one," Hemish said, while cracking his knuckles. "Let's get it over with." Kestra smiled. "Are you sure you have the plan?" Demetrius yet again asked Alexander. "Yes." Alec was almost to the point of ignoring his friend. "Positive. Yes. I'll go through it again. We bring Smythe the cookies. He takes them. Then we say that we've been assigned as his attendants and that we are to attend him wherever he goes. Should we tell him that just in case he doesn't understand what the word attendance means?" Good point. He is supposed to be quite old. Demetrius wrinkled his brow as he thought. In return, Alec sighed loudly. "Don't be such an idiot. Besides, we've arrived." They were indeed at the door of the commander's tent. Demetrius secured his peculiar scepter behind him as Alec steadied the tray of cookies. "Your cookies, sir!" "Bring them in," came the response. The pair entered only to stop at the sight of Smythe, now in his armor. It was a magnificent piece of work, full-scale mail. The scales themselves, all of a variety of shades, green, gold, red, black, copper, blue, white, all the colors blended in together in such a way that it was hard to tell where one color stopped and the next started. Watching Smythe move was like watching a prism be swiveled. The colors danced. It was hypnotic, and at the same time, jarring. "That suit, it's," began Alec before trailing off. "True dragon scale, yes." Caradon beamed with pride. Despite all the gray in his mustache and hair, he looked youthful and strong. "All scales I've collected myself. Nothing offers greater protection, especially from dragons." He delivered the last line with a smirk and a wink. The cookies," Demetrius offered, motioning to the tray. He couldn't take his eyes off the armor. "My thanks," said Smythe as he took the tray and placed it on a nearby table. "That will be all." Right, said Demetrius, and he turned towards the outside. "No," said Alec as he caught the retreating Demetrius by the cloak. "That is, we are to be your attendants." Smith shrugged, sending a ripple of color across the armor. "Fine by me. Fetch my sword from the trunk over there." He took a cookie and began munching. Inside the trunk, Alec found a sheathed sword that looked to be as long as he was tall and wider than his two hands put together. He cast his eyes back at the happily munching figure and wondered how he could wield such a thing. Even lifting it out of the trunk was an effort. As he pulled the heavy sword out, he noticed what looked to be a haft of a crossbow attached to a finely engraved metal pipe.
What is this?
Alec wondered out loud.
That, answered Caradon with another wink while taking the sword, is something that will surprise that big lizard when it arrives. I've been waiting a few years to try that thing out. Looks like today will be the chance.
He took another cookie and popped it into his mouth.
The cookies taste like curry.
He sniffed at the sugary treat.
Nope, it isn't the cookie.
He gave the air a few snorts before fixing his eyes on Demetrius.
It's you, boy. You stink of curry.
There was an accident in the kitchen, Demetrius explained meekly.
Then you need to go clean yourself up.
But I'm your attendant.
Exactly. And I don't want you reeking while you attend. Now, go clean yourself off.
But I'm supposed to attend.
I said go!
Fire came into Smythe's voice. He was here to lead an army, not to be disobeyed by pages. Demetrius reached behind his cloak and took hold of the scepter.
Sleep, he commanded.
A wave washed over the commander, who in return glared at the boy.
What the hell did you just...
Sleep! Demetrius commanded again, brandishing the scepter in front of him. The fireflies inside danced madly. Smythe threw down the tray with a clang and pulled the massive sword free of its sheath.
Sleep! 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 Yelled the mage.
The light in his scepter grew so bright Alec had to shield his eyes.
What... did...
Smythe tried to speak as the sword fell from his hands. His eyes fought to stay open as his bulk fell to the floor. Soon, loud, steady snores bubbled out of him. Demetrius panted.
That was harder than it should have been, the mage gasped out.
Of course it was. Dragon scale can ward off magic, Alex explained matter-of-factly. It's in a lot of songs.
Thanks for the update.
For some reason, the two of them found this funny and burst into laughter.
Commander Smythe!
The shout from outside the tent cut short their shared laugh. The two stared at each other. This wasn't part of the plan.
Halt!
Demetrius barked, trying to emulate the commander.
What?
Sir, the fight is breaking out. You should come, quick!
Fine. Be there, quick!
Demetrius stared at Alec.
What do we do? Alec asked, barely above a whisper.
Wait. You and Smythe are roughly the same height.
So?
Alec's confusion slowly gave way to understanding.
You can't be serious. Demetrius smiled.
Kestra decided to take it easy on the big man. It was fairly obvious he wasn't used to fighting someone much smaller than himself. She took that as proof of character. She avoided his opening punches and, instead of crushing the front of his knee, which would have forever limited his ability to walk, she simply pounded him in just the right place beneath his ribcage. All of his air exploded out. He sank to his knees, attempting to fill his lungs. She spun. The kick sent him sprawling into the dirt. The crowd had gone silent, as she knew it would.
Don't worry. He'll be fine, she assured them.
She scanned the faces in the crowd. There were two ways this could turn out. She sighed as more and more faces grew angry.
Why do things so rarely go the simple way? She asked herself.
Okay, who's next? A man with short black hair and bad teeth stepped into the circle. She boxed his ears and pushed him back. Next came a fat man. It was simple to use his own heavy swings to throw him to the ground. She stopped her heavy boot inches from his face as he screamed, "Yield!" Before he could crawl away, the next one entered. He tried to wrap his arms around her. She crushed his face with her forehead. She was starting to breathe harder. The next two came and went. The shouts from the crowd were getting angrier. As she was dealing with a man in front of her, she felt a ragged tear across her arm. A bald man behind her held a jagged and bloody knife. He sneered. She knocked his teeth free, crushed his knee, and shattered what was his wrist. She looked back at the man she had been fighting. He held up his hands and backed away.
Anyone else? She asked the circle. She counted five men who entered.
You can do this, she told herself as she started forward.
Enough! A thunderous voice boomed over the crowd. My army does not fight itself. It is to fight a dragon.
As one, the crowd turned to face their commander,
who was adorned in the finest dragon scale armor ever assembled, with a matching full helm that covered his face. In his hands, he held a massive broadsword. Following him was a cloaked attendant holding something that curiously resembled a crossbow.
"Go! Ready your posts," the voice boomed. "Make yourselves ready!"
Soldiers scrambled every which way in a mad hurry to obey their commander. Kestra walked over to Talbert, still sitting in the dirt. "Have you recovered?" she asked him, holding out a hand to help him up.
"I think so," he said, taking her hand and noticing the blood. "I might need to stitch that up.
If you can make it fast, we might be in trouble."
"How's that? It sounds like Alec is now the commander of the Dragon Army." "Oh, right."
For the first time, Talbert glanced at the new commander and his attendant.
"That's odd," he said. "Demetrius seems to be holding my academy project."
He then attempted to stand and only succeeded in falling back into the dirt.
That's all for this week. Thanks for listening. Deadly Troubadours is now available as an ebook from Smashwords.com, Amazon.com, and Apple's online store. If you want to know more about me, Brent Thomas, you can visit my website at DeadlyTroubadour.com. You can also like me on Facebook by searching for the page Deadly Troubadours. This podcast is available on iTunes, so if you have a moment, please rate and review the show. While you are there, why not check out my other podcasts, Comics League International and Living Japan. If you want to contact me, email me at deadlytroubadour@gmail.com or follow me on Twitter at deadtroubadour. Once again, thanks for listening. If you are enjoying the book, please share it with your friends. And please tune in next week for the continuing adventures of the Deadly Troubadours.